shy. When I covered the Expos, that was a pretty good total attendance for a series at some point.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's not only the fact that it's a Monday, Tuesday, but you've got a Blue Jay team in rebuild. Local hero Russell Martin isn't on the club anymore. You know, there are a lot of all the past draws that they had are gone. And, you know, the Brewers are a terrific team and they are super fun to watch. And Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, and those guys are legit ballers, but it's not exactly a marquee opponent either. So, you know, all things being considered, I think you'd definitely take the 24 if you're a Venko.
Yeah, tonight will be fun as well. The Panthers are in Montreal, so it'll be interesting to compare attendances. Before we get to the unimportant stuff, tell me your clean NWA story.
Well, a few years back, Dustin Pedroia used the Eazy-E song Real Something Something G's as his walk-up music.
Right.
And every time it would come on, I'd be always impressed that the guys at Fenway managed to find enough clean portions to get 15 seconds that they could play at the ballpark.
But, you know what? We got a version coming up next of that, of Real Something Something Cheese, and it is a clean radio version.
Right.
I swear to God. So it's probably got to be, what, 3 seconds?
Basically, but Dustin Pedroia, they found enough of it for Dustin Pedroia to walk up, dig in, and get ready to go.
Let's talk about last night's game. First of all, I want to talk about Bo Bichette because, he's getting into Alex Bregman territory with me as far as guys that I really, 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 I mean, almost man crushable guys that I really, really like to watch go about their business. Again, we saw yesterday in Montreal that play he made on that bouncer behind the mound. And, you know, Buck Martinez made a point during the telecast, and he was referring to, you know, the debate as to whether or not Bo can play shortstop or whether or not he may have to move to second. Buck said, you know what, just let him play shortstop. Let him break into the majors as a shortstop and see where it goes. And I'm just wondering, I mean, you've been around that team a lot. You've seen him in camp. What do you think about that?
Look, I think at this point, there's no doubt that he deserves the chance to start as a shortstop. And, you know, last year at this time, the debate was, is he going to be able to you know, just be an average shortstop? And I think at this point, that's not a debate anymore. There's some people wondering if, like, you know, this guy could be above average, maybe even a bit on the plus side, mm-hmm. As a defender at shortstop. And look, there's more work, but, you know, the times that I visited New Hampshire last year, you know, he'd be on the field 1 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game, doing an hour of work, you know, working on moving to his left, working on moving to his right, throwing on the run. All the things that you saw, or some of the things you at least saw on that play on the Orlando Arcia grounder, and it's impressive. Like, you know, he's put in the work. He wants to become a terrific defender. It wasn't necessarily his natural position coming up, but, you know, now he's there. He's athletic enough, and I think the consensus is that he's got a legit chance to have an impact up there at shortstop.
You know, it's watching him go about his business. And I was thinking about this. We had Ross Atkins in the show when we were down there, and Ross talked about how Bo kind of sets something up for himself every offseason. He wants to get better at this. And then the next offseason, he wants to get better at this. And it reminded me a little bit of, as I said, DeMar DeRozan, when he was sort of, you know, as he was falling into place in Toronto. He was presented a challenge every year by his coaches, especially Dwayne Casey. We want you to get better at this. He'd go away in the summer, work on it, come back. He'd be better at that. We want you to do this, go away in the summer, come back. He'd be better at it. And what I kind of like about Bo is, Shy, he's not doing it, at least from a distance, it doesn't appear as if he's doing it because he has a chip on his shoulder. He's doing it because this will make him a better player, and that is going to make him a lot of money fast. You know, and there's a real, almost a corporate approach to what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a chip on your shoulder guy at all. You know, he's one of those, you know, I know I'm good and I want to be great type of guys. And that speaks to exactly what you were talking about there. And, he's succeeded as a hitter at every level. And as a defender, I think when he got into pro ball, it was a little bit of an adjustment for him. And he realized, okay, I really got to work at this a little bit more than I have to stick at this point at the major league level at this position. And he's done it. And you're right. There is a determination there. There's a work ethic. But, you know, I think that it's interesting just how different athletes find different fuels and different motivations. You know, there are a lot of chip on your shoulder guys and, you know, I'm going to prove you wrong and you're challenging me. And then there are the guys who are just, you know, they have this inherent self-belief and, you know, they're, and with a determination to become as great as they possibly can. And certainly I think that's the category Bo Bichette is in. And I think that bodes well. Look, you know, on a lot of teams, he would have been hyped far more than he's been, but he's been in Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s shadow a little bit. And what he's shown this spring is that, you know, he deserves just as much spotlight as Vlad.
Yeah. And it's interesting too. And I mean, I don't want to hammer the point, but we got to spend We spend a game, as quite often do, down in the corner near the Blue Jays clubhouse in spring training, and Bo was sitting out in one of the chairs down in the corner that guys sit in for an inning or so before they go out, before they go into the dugout. And just watching him interact with some kids who were, like, leaning over and trying to get a ball signed, and it was a young kid who had no idea who the hell he was talking to. He kept yelling, 66, 66, can I have an autograph? It was fun watching the back and forth between him and this kid. And yeah, as I said, yeah, I came away really favorably, favorably thinking really favorably of him, not just as a player, but as a dude. He just strikes me. He is a dude, isn't he? Like, he is a dude. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he's also really comfortable with the attention and the limelight, and I think there's probably a part of him that really enjoys it too. Like he likes the attention, and he likes people knowing that he's good. And look, you need that to a certain degree. You know, you don't want if you're the wallflower reserve type, and you've got an immense talent, that can be a difficult spot to navigate. So because when you're good, there are a lot of demands on your attention. So I think all those things play in his favor. I mean, certainly worked well for him to this point. And, you know, I mean, if he continues on the path that he's on, you know, the call-up Vladdy discussion that was, you know, so constant throughout last year is going to shift and be a call-up Bo conversation this year.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the Jays pitching, where we are right now. Last night, Elvis Luciano, you know, hitting Lorenzo Cain, but making a really nice pitch to strike out Christian Yelich. We know that Daniel Hudson signed by the team. You know, I've heard you wrote today about Dan Straley, the Jays having an interest in him. Wilner's talked about Zach McAllister. It's pretty clear, isn't it, that by Friday, there could very easily be at least one new pitcher in town.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that they're juggling right now, just because, you know, they can't set up optimally without Ryan Barucki and Ryan Tepera and John Axford. I mean, you know, all their plans have been submarined by that. Now you've got to figure out who's going to start. And, you know, I'm not sure they necessarily wanted Trent Thornton to be that guy, but you know, if they don't add someone externally, then Trent Thornton gets the ball at least to start in Ryan Barucki's place in all likelihood. And then they've got to figure out the bullpen. They've got a bunch of non-roster options who are really the leading candidates, but that's not really good for their 40-man situation because they're going to have to sacrifice some bodies for that. And the Blue Jays don't necessarily want to do that. There's a lot of asset management that has to happen. So they're sort of juggling a few things, and there isn't really an optimal setup. So I'm really curious as to how all this is going to play out. And, you know, as much as, you know, you try to track it and are paying attention to things, everything is really fluid at this point. And I think they're waiting for an opportunity or, you know, an ad that will, you know, bring some clarity and allow them to resolve it in time for Thursday.
What do you think happens with Elvis Luciano?
You know, I still think it's going to be tough for them. But to carry him all year, and just because of the way their pitching staff is going to set up, they're going to have to be constantly running guys up and down, and you don't want to have to carry an eight-man bullpen. But at least out of the gate, you know, my sense is that they carry an eight-man bullpen, and if they're carrying an eight-man bullpen, then at least they can give the Luciano thing a shot and start the season with him. So the way he bounced back yesterday after hitting Kane by getting Yelich and getting Aguilar on the fly ball, I think that maybe was enough to get him on the opening day roster. But, you know, it's just going to be – you can't hide a guy for 25 games or for 162 games and essentially play those with a 24-man roster because you're not sure what you're getting out of the kid. You know, I just especially with the pitching staff and the position that it's in, I just don't know how they pull that off for an entire season.
And final question, I guess the position battle, the one remaining position battle, I think, is between Eric Sogard and Richard Urania. How do you see that shaking out?
I think that goes that gets decided in part by the asset management discussion, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Eric Sogard's a non-roster guy. I think all things being equal, you might want him on your team as opposed to Urania right now. But you'd have to clear a 40-man spot for him. And if you need one, two, or three 40-man spots for your bullpen, your pitching situation, are you going to be able to create another for Sogard? So I think at this point, you know, my guess, and it's just a guess, is that Urania probably ends up getting that spot with Sogard starting the season at Triple A. But, you know, it's a lot can happen between now and then. And I wonder if we may see the Blue Jays try to clear some spots in a creative way in order to get him on the roster.